And now your speaker is Alan Collins.
Sure, we've heard it said many times, God is in control. God is in control, perhaps, of our lives, of this universe, of everything that happens. We hear of God's control, of God's sovereignty spoken of at different times and in different ways. But we hear about that control. I want to talk about control tonight. Talk about God's control. I'll look briefly at God and His sovereignty over our lives and over this universe. But then I want to move a little bit beyond that and talk about control in our own lives. What control should we exercise over our lives? What does God expect from us? I want to start with God, though, asking the question, is God in control of everything? There are a few things that we can establish for certain about God, things that we can look back to the Scriptures and find out about God and find out about His role in this universe and His control over this universe. We see where some people might go wrong in going too far with God's sovereignty. If we go to look at a Calvinistic doctrine where God has complete control over man's destiny, where God has predestined or predetermined who is going to be saved, who is going to be lost, who are the ones that are going to believe in Him, have faith in Him, and follow Him, and then who are the ones who are going to reject Him. Some would go as far as to say that God has predestined those individuals, those who are going to be saved, and those who are going to be lost. But as we look through this first point tonight, looking at God and then looking at our lives through the rest of the lesson, we'll see how this is not necessarily the case. But I want to look at God first. Go back to the beginning, to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and following, and we see that God created the heavens and the earth. God created this earth. He put everything on it. He put man on it. He is the creator of the earth and the creator of the entire universe. So everything that is here is His, and He had the power to put it here. So we see great power and great ability in God, and the fact that He did create this universe and brought us into being. If we come to the New Testament, to Luke chapter 12, we see in verse 6 and verse 7, there in Luke 12, two different areas of interest that God has in life on the earth that He created. Luke chapter 12, verse 6 says, "Are not five sparrows sold for 2 farthings? Indicating something fairly insignificant. These small birds and a fairly a low price on these birds. 5 sparrows sold for 2 farthings, it says, and not one of them is forgotten before God." This tiny, insignificant, inexpensive thing says God has interest in that. Jesus goes on in verse 7, "But even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows." We see God creating this universe. We see Him having power over that creation. We see Him having an interest in that creation. Interest over the sparrows, all the way up to interest over mankind and all the creation that is in between. If we go to the verse that Brother Mason read for us just a few minutes ago, to Isaiah chapter 46, verses 9 and 10, we see God expressing His power and expressing His ability to do whatever it is that He wants to do. And in the context here, He is warning of punishment, warning those who are worshiping idols, those who refuse to serve Him. He's warning of the possibility of punishment coming when He says, "Remember the former things of old, for I am God, there is none else. I am God and there is none like me." Nobody has that sovereign power that God has. Nobody has the creative ability that God has, the power that we've talked about already. It goes on in verse 10, declaring the end from the beginning. It says, "From the very beginning of the time, I'm able to declare what's going to happen at the end of time." It says, "And from ancient times, the things that are not yet done." Go back to the ancient days, things that are had not happened yet at that point and have not happened. God knows those things. God can declare those things. Finishes out verse 10 saying, "My counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure." As we go on into verse 11, we see how He warns of punishment that may come, calling a bird of prey from the east. "Man who executes my counsel from a far country, indeed I have spoken it. I will bring it to pass. I have purposed it, and I will do it." When God speaks it, when God purposes it, when He determines that it's going to be done, it is going to be done. So we see God creating the universe. We see God having an interest in the universe. We see God declaring that the things that He wants to be done will be done. And we can go look at one more thing. If we go to Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, we see God and His power and His sovereignty and the impact that that can have on the lives of those who serve Him and those who are faithful to Him. Romans chapter 8, verse 28, that we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. If you remember the lesson this morning that Brother Weddington read, things that he mentioned about Paul and Paul's preaching and Paul's works that he had done, that, and some of that that had to come to an end when Paul was imprisoned. Paul was there chained to a guard day and night. But other brethren continued to preach and teach. And Paul recognized that through his bonds, through him being in chains, things worked together for good. Even though he was imprisoned, he's able to have visitors come and go. He's able to speak with those people. He's able to teach the guards who were there, chained up to him. But also those others who were out teaching were emboldened. They were given the encouragement and the strength that they needed to go on and to pick up the work where Paul had left off. One example that we see then of things working together for good, even bad things that happen. Also, as was mentioned this morning, that bad things happen to good people, and how Paul was sort of the poster child for that. How Paul experienced all kinds of bad things in his life, from beatings and shipwrecks and hunger all the way to being in prison. But he recognized that things do work together for good and recognized God's role in all of those things. But still looking at all of these scriptures about God, looking at the things that he did in Paul's life and the things that are promised to us and for those who love him and those who want to serve him and obey him, you know, there are still some things that may be difficult for us to see. And we speak of God's providence. You know, if we go back to the Bible and we see all the stories that are told, all the events that took place, we kind of get extra insight. Having it written there for us and being able to see the big picture, we can see God's direct intervention. We can see God bringing down the walls of Jericho. We can see God bringing a storm when Jonah was trying to escape his command to go preach in Nineveh. And we see God preparing that storm and the fish or the whale that swallowed up Jonah. All these things that happen throughout the Scriptures, we have kind of a bird's eye view. We can see some of what God saw, and we have it presented in a manner that we can see all of God's workings, all of God's miraculous workings, God's providential workings. Perhaps if we go to the book of Esther, and we see God's providence at work there in guiding the events that took place and getting Esther to be queen and able then, through that position, to save the Jews from destruction. But seeing God's direct action in the works, in the lives of people throughout the Bible, seeing a miraculous work, seeing the providential works, you know, there are still questions for us today. It's hard to see sometimes exactly what God is causing to happen. Things that God is allowing to happen. How is it that all things are working together for good? Some things remain a bit of a mystery. Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 29, Moses, there in Deuteronomy, speaking to the children of Israel, speaking of the law, Deuteronomy literally meaning a second giving of the law, repeating of the law. So Moses is going back, telling the law to all the children of Israel just before they're about to enter the promised land. And he says to them in Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 29, says, "The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law." Moses, in giving the law to the people, reminding the children of Israel, because this is an entirely new generation that has grown up since the time that they left Egypt and since the time they were given the Ten Commandments and the rest of the law at Sinai. This is a whole new generation that's grown up. So Moses repeating this law to them says there's secret things. There's things we may not always know, things we may not understand. But he says what we do know, what we do have, what is revealed to us, to do the words of this law. Follow the words of this law. We have an obligation to serve God by obeying the law that He has provided us with. While they were under a different law from what we are under today, certainly that principle applies. And also then that principle of there are some secret things. We read of God's power, God's sovereignty, bringing this back to the control matter here. We read of God's sovereignty over the universe. We read of His ability to have control over everything. But some things still remain a mystery of what exactly He has done, what things He has not done, what things He allows, what things He causes. But we still have an obligation to do something on our part. We have that obligation to follow the law, to understand the law, and then to live by it. So that brings us really to the main point of what I want to talk about tonight. Really, who is in control of our lives? We talk about God and His power over the universe. And then, as we said, some would say that God has power, direct power in our lives, making every decision for us. That it's not really us, that we have no free will. There's a whole discussion in itself, whether from a religious viewpoint or not. Do we have free will? Does man have the ability to make his own choices, choose which way he's going to go in life, and then through those choices, whether or not they are in accordance with God's will, then have an impact on his own eternal destiny? But most people want to be in control of their lives. They want to have control. They want to be able to make the choices that they want and live the life that they want. They don't want choices forced upon them. They want to exercise their free will, and they want to exercise that free will freely. That is, they don't want to have people tell them what they have to choose, tell them what it is that they have to do. If we go to the Scriptures, we can certainly see that man is given free will. Man is given the ability to choose. If we again go back to the story of the children of Israel, after Moses died, Joshua led the conquest of the promised land, leading the children of Israel and defeating various peoples who were in the land that God had promised to them. And late in Joshua's life, he's getting close to death. In Joshua chapter 24, verses 14 and 15, Joshua presents the people there with a choice, recognizing that they have free will. They have a choice. They can choose which way they want to go. Joshua 24, starting in verse 14, Joshua, addressing the people, says, "Now therefore fear the Lord, and serve Him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood, and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Great lesson in that itself. Choosing to serve God over the idols that once were worshipped. He's looking to their ancestors back in Egypt and the gods that were worshipped there, the gods that are worshipped in the land that they were coming into. But he says, make that choice. Choose to serve God. As for me and my house, he says, we will serve the Lord. Joshua said, choose. Joshua didn't say that all of you who are predestined by God to serve Him and follow after Him may worship Him. And then all of those who God has predetermined they're not going to follow Him, then you may go and worship these gods in Egypt or worship the gods of the Amorites. Joshua told them to make that choice for themselves. If we look also at the Ten Commandments and the rest of the law and the things that Moses said they needed to follow after, the things Joshua says they need to follow after, just to look at all of the commandments, go to the Ten Commandments, pick one out, thou shalt not kill. We see God giving the command, Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16, thou shalt not kill. It is apparent here that it is God's will that man does not kill. God desires that we do not kill one another. We do not commit murder. So if God exercised complete control and complete sovereignty in this area, then there would be no murders. Cain would not have killed Abel from that first murder and then on through the rest of time. There would have been no murders if God exercised full control in that area, saying, thou shalt not kill. We see it's God's will that we not kill. So if God exercised that power in controlling that will or enforcing that will, then there would be no murders. But we see God giving the instruction. We see man having the ability then to choose whether or not he wants to follow after those commands. The discussion could go on and on about free will, about whether or not man can really choose, and whether it's in philosophy or in religion, there's great debate and great discussion all around the world on whether or not man has free will. But we see very clearly, simply from the Bible, because there are instructions given, whether we see Joshua telling them to choose this day who they will serve, or if we just look at all of the commandments that God gives us, we see that we have the ability to choose whether or not we are going to follow those commandments. But what does God then tell us to do? What does God tell us to do with our own lives? Coming back to this idea of God is God in control? Is God in control of our lives? God tells us to have control over our own lives. We go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 and 25. Paul writing here using an analogy of an athletic event, of a race here, as Paul did often spoke of athletic things, used those to illustrate his points. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24, he says, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain." He says, run the race so that you can obtain the prize. And he says, there are some stipulations here if you want to win that prize. What do we have to do? Verse 25, "Every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." The first part of verse 25 there is the key. If every man, and every man that striveth for the mastery, or every man that is trying to gain this crown, every man that's trying to win the race, trying to accomplish something, he says he must be temperate in all things. He must exercise self-control. To be temperate literally means to exercise self-control. If we go over to Galatians chapter 5 and look at the fruit of the Spirit there, in the King James it is expressed as temperate. In the New King James it's shown there as self-control, as one of those one of the fruit there that is listed in the fruit of the Spirit. We have to exercise self-control. And if we look at athletics and any sport that anybody may participate in today, that if you want to win, if you want to win the ball game, if you want to win the race, if you want to get whatever prize it may be, you have to exercise self-control. Self-control in playing by the rules. Self-control in how you manage your body and how you accomplish the task that is at hand. If you want to hit the ball, if you want to run the fastest, whatever it may be, you have to control yourself. You have to be in control of your body if you want to gain that prize. God tells us to have self-control. So if we're going to control ourselves, then we have to ask the question, based on what? If you're playing a sport, you know there's rules to play by. You know there's certain ways to accomplish the task that you're trying to accomplish. But if we want to exercise self-control the way that God tells us to exercise self-control, then we have to look to His will. We have to look to the instructions that He has given for us. Where do we find that? Of course, we find that in the Bible. We find all of the instructions, the thing that we talked about, if we're going back, as we mentioned, we looked at the Ten Commandments. God gave commandments. God gave instructions to the children of Israel. God gives instructions for us today of how we are to control ourselves. Now, these fall into a few different areas. On one hand, we can look at the sin, the things that God tells us not to do. These things are sin. Whether it's thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, murder, lying, adultery, fornication, hate, envy, all of these things are things that God says don't do. These are sins. These are the things that you should avoid. And if you're going to be practicing self-control, then these are the things that you must not do. But then He also tells us the good things that we are to do. He says, do good deeds. We are to love one another. We are to be patient, to be long-suffering, to be kind, to be gentle. Again, go back to the fruit of the Spirit. All of those things are the things that we are instructed to do. So if we want to have self-control, then we need to avoid the things that are wrong. We need to do the things that are right. And we could also look at God's instructions for us in worship. The things that we are to do in worship, the things that should be excluded from worship, things that we are perhaps strictly forbidden to do, or simply things that we are not commanded to do, and things that should be left out of our worship. We have to exercise self-control in those areas as well. But seeing God's instructions for us, seeing the things that He says are sins and things we should not do, seeing the good things that we should do, seeing the way that we should worship God, we see God's will for us. We see the things that God desires that we do and the things God desires that we do not do. But God's not going to force His will upon us. We can look at God's will in different ways. We can see God's will in creating the universe. God determined He was going to create the universe, and He did create the universe. Going back to Isaiah chapter 46 and the passages that we looked at there. If God declares that something is going to happen, it is going to happen. If God declares that somebody is going to be punished, as in the context there in Isaiah 46, then that punishment is going to come. If the punishment is going to come. If God says it's going to happen, it is going to happen. If God says something is not going to happen, it's not going to happen. But then if we look at the commands that God gives, the instructions for our lives, we see it's God's will that we don't commit murder. It's God's will that we love Him and that we worship Him. But He's not going to force those things upon us. Ultimately, there will be consequences for not following God's will, for not obeying God's will. Romans 6:23 says the wages of sin is death. Not just a physical death here on this earth, but a spiritual death, an eternal separation from God, eternal punishment in hell. That will be the punishment. That will be what becomes of those who do not follow after God's will. So God's will for us, simply put, obedience. Avoiding the things that are wrong, doing the things that are right, worshiping Him the way that He says to worship. So how do we bring this back then to control? Who is in control? Am I in control of my life? Do I make the choices for my life, determining which direction my life is going to go? Or is God in control in the sense that He tells me what I have to do? If I want to please Him, then there's certain things that I have to do to please Him. So am I in control? Is God in control? We bring it all together in submission. Submission to God. Submission to His will. When I bring my will in alignment with God's will, that's submission. Romans chapter 12, the first two verses, speak of this process of bringing our wills in line with God's will for us. Romans chapter 12, verse 1, Paul writes, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. In verse 2, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. He says, be not conformed to this world. Don't do things like the world does. Don't act like the people in the world, those who have no thought of God or no concern for God's will. He says, don't live like those people. Don't look like those people. Don't try to act like those people. He says, be transformed. Don't conform yourself. Don't shape yourself into the mold that everybody else has been shaped into. But transform yourself. Change yourself. Get out of that worldly mindset. Transform yourself into somebody who is going to model his life after God's will. Be a different kind of person from the rest of this world. And he tells how that happens. He says, by the renewing of your mind. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. We have to start thinking a different way. You know, somebody who thinks, I want to be in control. I want to make my own decisions. I want to do things the way that I want. And I don't want anybody telling me what I can and cannot do. It's the worldly way of thinking. That's a very dangerous way of thinking. But when we transform ourselves, when we renew our minds, we begin to think a different way. Turn over a few pages to 1 Corinthians chapter 2, and we read about two different kinds of people here. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 14 through 16. We read here about a natural man, that is, one who thinks in an earthly way, in a worldly way, and then there is the spiritual man, the one who is thinking after the things of God. 1 Corinthians 2, starting in verse 14. Says, but the natural man, the one thinking in worldly ways, the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judgeth all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. The natural man thinks like the rest of the world. Focuses on worldly things. Focuses on doing what he wants to do. And spiritual matters are foolishness to him. They don't make sense to them because he doesn't want them to make sense. He doesn't want to know them. He doesn't want to understand them. He doesn't care about them. So they are foolishness to him. And if you look at some of the things that we believe, to somebody who doesn't have the insight and the understanding of what's in the Scriptures, yeah, they seem pretty foolish. And if we look at what our whole religion is based on, what is the center of our faith, the center of our worship? It comes down to a man being nailed to a cross to save us from our sins. That the Almighty God of heaven would send a part of Himself into this earth to become flesh, live here for 30-something years, and then be nailed to a cross so that we wouldn't have to suffer eternity in hell. We can look into that. We can understand that. We could spend multiple lessons talking about the sacrifice that was made on the cross, of how it was necessary for Jesus to die for us, how that expresses God's love for us. But somebody from a worldly mindset would say, well, that's just foolishness. That's ridiculous to think that that has anything to do with whether or not somebody's going to go to heaven or stay out of hell, if there even really is a heaven or a hell. Go on top of that and look at sin. You know, if the cross is foolishness, if the existence of God and God sending His Son, if all that's foolishness, then sin doesn't make any sense either. Why is something wrong? What makes this right and what makes this wrong? Who makes that determination? So that natural man, thinking with a worldly mind, sees all that as foolishness. Pointless. Why bother with any of this spiritual stuff? Why bother worrying about God and trying to please God and avoiding sin? Why bother? But the spiritual man, if we look at the end of verse 16, it says, we have the mind of Christ. We read the Bible. We understand the Bible. We see the sacrifice that was made on our behalf. We see how God's love for us is expressed in that. We see the obedience then that we need to have to God and to His commands, and how important it is that we follow Him. We see then also the eternal consequences of our actions, whether our actions lead us to heaven or lead us to hell. If we follow after God's will, conforming our lives to God's will, then we lead to a positive outcome. If we reject God's will, then we lead to punishment. To bring it back to submission, we have a scriptural basis and a spiritual basis for our thoughts and for our understanding. We try to model our lives, transform our lives to match the teachings of the Scripture, to look like a person that is described. If God could write down, you know, we can take all of the Bible as a whole and we learn from that, but if we could kind of distill from that, this is what the person of God does, and there's various passages that speak of that. Bring it all together. This is a child of God. This is how a child of God acts and lives and worships. If we could model our lives after that, when we model our lives after that, that is submission to God. That is basing our will and our desires on what God's desire for us is. That is submission. That is how we exercise self-control. How do I control myself? If I need to have self-control, I need to know what the things are that I'm supposed to do and the things I'm not supposed to do. How do I control myself? How do I live my life that really means I'm being temperate or I'm being self-controlled on God's terms? So bringing our will in line with God's will, having a desire to do the things that He desires from us, then who is in control? Man is in control of his own choices. Man can determine whether or not he wants to follow after God. God is in control of the plan. God is the one who made the plan. He made the law. He made the plan of salvation, of how He would send His Son to this earth to die for us. God had control over that. And ultimately, God has control over our eternity. You know, we can look at all the freedoms we may have in this life, freedom to choose to do this or that, or not to do this or that. We can go live a life of sin. We can go live in adultery. We can go murder people. We can lie and cheat and steal if we want to do that. Nothing's stopping us. The laws of the land may interfere with that, but we can go out and we can practice sin, and there are plenty of sinful things that you can do that won't get you into legal trouble, won't land you in jail. Yeah, we can do all those things. But, again, back to what we read in Isaiah, that God has determined from the beginning what's going to happen in the end. God may not micromanage every aspect of our lives in the sense that He pulls the puppet strings and tells us where we're going to go and what we're going to do, but He has control over our eternal destination. He has control over whether or not we will spend eternity in heaven with Him. So He has that control. We know He is going to absolutely 100% exercise that control over that aspect of our lives. That when the end comes, God is going to make that determination of where we will spend eternity. So we need to be sure that when we control ourselves, when we exercise our self-control, that we bring our will in line with God's will. We submit to Him. We do the things that He tells us to do. We avoid the things He tells us not to do. So that even when we are making our own choices, even though we have that ability to control our own lives, we let God control us. We let Him, through His instructions and through our submission to Him, have control over our lives.